So, you know, Dr. Bethia Walsh, it would seem that, you know, if a person is beginning to use a drug, all they got to do is just go ahead and stop. They should be okay. And if they haven't stopped soon enough, seem like they're addicted, just go ahead and determine, resolve, I'm going to stop using. Mm-hmm. But it's not quite that easy. You mentioned there's a psychological component, mm-hmm. but you say there's also a physiological component.
Actually, if I may back up for a second, so I'm glad you brought that up because people often think of addiction in different ways. They think about it as a moral issue. So that's the, you know, if you just stop doing it, then, or an issue of will. If you stop doing it, you can get over this. Or if you pray it away, then God will take it from you. I support people in having a spiritual process when managing any sort of substance use concern or addiction. At the same time, it's also a lot more complicated than that. There's certainly a motivational factor, so that in general, people are more likely to argue for it. And there really is actually an evidence-based intervention called motivational interviewing I practice, and I train healthcare providers to practice to help guide the conversation and sculpt the conversation so that the person themselves argues into change. Changes the whole dynamic of the conversation so that the helper themselves aren't having to tell people what to do, because that really doesn't matter anyway. We can't make people stop. We can't tell them to, you know, we can tell them, but it doesn't mean that people are going to actually do it. So why not spend more time in supporting people and making decisions that are more aligned with how they really want to be? So anyway, there's a whole, you know, psychological component to this, biological component. Like I said, for many people who have been using for a long time or who engage in heavy use, to stop automatically actually might not be a healthy thing to do, because their body is so used to having the substance in the system that the body doesn't even know what it's like to manage without it. And so that's when you have the withdrawal symptoms, and some withdrawal symptoms can be pretty, very severe, even seizures and death. So we really want to be careful when we're talking to people about stopping, and there are so many different treatments to help people do that in a safe way and to guide them toward a path of true recovery and sobriety.
That is so interesting that if the withdrawal is not handled properly, the results could be as extreme as seizures and even death.
Sure, yeah. So This is, you know, people often hear about, you know, obviously the opioid crisis and people who overdose on opioids. And you might find, if you really look at those stories, that for many people, not all, but for many people, it happens after they've been abstinent for a while. So a relapse. And so they haven't used in a while, and then they use a drug that's got a high, really high dose to it. Their body can't take it. This is sort of the flip side. And so, you know, again, some of the effects can be death. So we really want to, really, really want to be careful when telling people or giving people advice about what to do. And the best, really the best thing to do is to support people in getting some help and whatever level that is, but to help them work with some professionals to move them toward the path of abstinence or whatever the outcome or goal is. For some people, it's abstinence. For some people, it's cut back, for, you know, whatever. So whatever that goal is.
Mm-hmm. So with regards to biology and physiology, are we focusing partly on what the chemicals, what the drugs are doing to the brain?
Yeah. So we think about the brain as a computer, and just like computers, they're set up to communicate with each other, right? So like in the brain is made up of neurons, a whole bunch of neurons. And neurons communicate with each other. And one of the main ways they communicate with each other is through these, what we call neurotransmitters. And across drugs, one of the main neurotransmitter that drugs act on is called dopamine. And dopamine is a neurotransmitter that when it surges, when it increases, we feel, just when it's high levels of dopamine, help us feel good about ourselves, sense of well-being, I've got control, I've got this, we put our capes on, you know, we think we feel effective in the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some levels of dopamine can be healthy for us. It's when the drugs act on dopamine so much to the point where they surge beyond, you know, far beyond high levels, is when people feel the sense of euphoria. And so this is why, for those of you out there who know someone who has had addiction for a long time, they might say something to you like, the first time I used drugs was it. So I've never, of all the years or whatever, all the times I've used drugs, they've never been as good as the first. And that's why, because that was the first time that drug was introduced to the brain, and the brain had a very strong reaction to that. That's also the reason why, part of the reason why some people develop an addiction, or at least more regular use, is because people are often chasing that for the effect that they experienced the first time. Does that make any sense?
That makes a lot of sense. And in fact, it makes me think about particularly what I hear, well, what I've heard some males say, certainly some females say, when it comes to their very first sexual experience. They talk about how that first sexual experience was the experience, and some of them chase that again, trying to recapture what it was like the first time, and most find that they just can't recapture that.
That the body gets activated by things in the environment. So that's an example. That can be a drug, that can be alcohol, that can be food. For some people, they get that surge of dopamine from food. And food certainly acts on the reward system. This is the reward system, dopamine reward system I'm talking about, the same reward system. So people can get addicted to food as well. I do surgical evaluations for people seeking weight loss surgery, so bariatric surgery, and there are quite a few people I met with over the years who have an eating disorder, a problem with how they relate to food. People get something from that, and just like with drugs or alcohol, that food can be that sense of, or that place where people nurture themselves, maybe because they didn't get that nurturing someplace else, but it often has something to do with attachment as well.
Wow. So when we come back, the time, as usual, is going back too fast. But when we come back, could you touch on addiction as it pertains to cultures?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Angela Bethea Walsh, will be right back to share with us some insights on how culture and addiction can sometimes make a connection that isn't necessarily positive. Back in just a few.